all yours.
Thank you, Matt. I should apologize if I'm going to be a little incoherent in this talk. As Matt mentioned, I just came from the airport. There was a tornado in the Midwest, and so I slept last night in Dallas Airport and was kind of debating whether to actually come here or not. So that's the bad news. The good news is, you know, this is a simple paper. It has a single message, and I should be able to convey that. How hard can that be? So this is joint work with my students Samet and Amin, and as was mentioned, it has to do with weighted compressed sensing and a little bit with rank minimization. So here is the outline of the talk. So what we want to look at is compressed sensing when you have some sort of prior information, and in particular, we'll assume that if you look at your signal, you can break it into partitions, and you know something about roughly the sparsity of each partition. So you're not assuming that sparsity is uniform over your signal, but you know it differs in different chunks, and we want to exploit that information. I'll talk a little bit about related work, then I'll formally define the problem, and then basically the contribution of this paper, as I said, it's a simple thing. We give a simple and explicit rule for doing weighted compressed sensing, weighted L1 minimization. And then I'll say a few words about how to extend this to rank minimization problems, and I won't say a whole lot about technical details. Math type to make sense. So in the absence of math type, those squares are supposed to be, I guess, boldface R. So X is a, you know, n-dimensional vector. This is just to introduce a notation. So the ambient dimension is little n. The number of measurements is M. So A is an M by N matrix. In compressed sensing, of course, the goal is to recover a sparse the signal X using, you know, fewer measurements than the ambient dimension and L1 minimization we've all heard of. And there's a great deal of work that's been done. People have looked at various algorithms, various models. You know, the previous talk was a different algorithm. The talk before that was looking at statistical models. In this talk, I want to focus on trying to do compressed sensing with signals that have a certain structure, which, as I said, is this structure with non-uniform sparsity. Which is the following. So if you look at the, let's see here. Okay, there I am. So if you look at, you know, the signal here, the conventional assumption is that, you know, the signals that one does L1 minimization on are uniformly sparse. But there are many applications one can think of, for example, in DNA microarrays, if you know something about the gene expression or so on, or what you're looking at, or other examples, that I've mentioned here, some network problems. Sometimes you do compressed sensing iteratively, and so you have prior information, or, you know, there are people have done compressed sensing in conjunction with things like Kalman filters when you have, you know, time variations and so on. So in many cases, you might actually know a lot more about, you know, what the sparsity structure is. And so in particular, what we'll assume here is that, you know, your signal, you might be able to break up into chunks, and you might know this chunk is less sparse and that chunk is more. Again, you don't know where the zeros and ones are, the non-zero entries are, but you may have prior information of this sort. Okay, and so a natural thing to do if you have, say, a collection of T partitions, which partition, I guess, the ambient dimension into T disjoint sets, and each partition might, you know, have a different sparsity, a natural thing to do if you want to stay within L1 optimization is just to weigh each partition with a different weight. So this notation means that this is all X's that have support on partition, or the set SI in this particular partition. And I'm adding up the one norms weighted by a particular W. So there's a different weight for each of the sets that define this partition. Okay, so we do a weighted L1 as opposed to the standard L1. And so the problem setting that I want to look at so we can do some analysis of this is that I'll assume that we know either, you know, and here it's mentioned deterministically, but this could also be probabilistic. So you might assume that the fraction of non-zero entries in each set SI of the partition to be some quantity PI, which you know. That would be kind of a deterministic assumption. All the analysis I'm going to and the results I'm going to describe extend to the case where this is actually probability. And so what that means is that each entry in this particular set is non-zero with probability pi. That would be a, if you will, stochastic characterization. But as I said, the results hold for both. Okay, and so we assume knowledge both of where these sets are and what the probability of them being non-zero, what the proportion of non-zero entries are. And again, the aim here is to minimize the number of measurements, m, that we need to recover this signal. Okay, so the question is, given knowledge of the p's and s, how should we choose these weights to recover x from the fewest number of measurements? So how can we map p and s to w? So people have looked at this. There's prior work. There's a work of Vaswani and Liu, something called modified compressed sensing, where they kind of look at this problem using RIP type results. There's an earlier paper of ours, Amin is the main author on this, where we actually answer this question exactly, if you will, using Grassmann angle methods. So we can actually essentially, if you choose a particular weights, we can compute what the threshold in terms of the number of measurements you need to recover a particular sparsity is. It's a very detailed analysis. You know, we can, you know, do things more or less if you have two sets in your partition, but once it goes beyond two to three or four, it becomes intractable. I mean, in principle, you can do it, but I wouldn't ever recommend you to do that. And so the goal of this paper really was somehow to give some insight into how to come up with these W's. Okay, and so what is the approach? So we will assume that the measurements are Gaussian. This allows us to push through some analysis. And so rather than go through this Grassmann angle stuff, we employ another technique that was introduced by Recht, Xu, and myself to look at rank minimization problems. It's an approximation. Well, not an approximation, I would say. It's not a tight bound. It gives an upper bound, if you will. And so, but we use that technique. And so the interesting thing is that we end up with a very simple result. Essentially, the weight for each set just becomes 1 minus the probability of being non-zero, if you will, in that set. Okay. So intuitively, this makes sense because we're punishing the sparser, if you will, sets. The sparser you are, the larger the weight is, and so we're penalizing, you know, actually the cost function more, as we probably should, for those sets. Okay, so it's a very simple thing that one can use, and I'll show you results of this. And of course, the drawback is that this is suboptimal. We can't claim that this is the optimal thing. The optimal thing, as I said, requires those Grassmann angle computations. So what is the strategy to recover this result? Well, we first look and find a condition for recovering signals when you do weighted L1 optimization, and then we attempt to analyze this condition. And so for those of you who are familiar with null space conditions for recovering signals with L1 optimization, in the weighted case, you get a very similar result, except that, you know, the weights now play a role. And so it turns out that you can recover a signal x if and only if, for all vectors in the null space of your measurement matrix, the following inequality holds. This is the sum over the null space entries. So I'm assuming the signal has support k. This is on the intersection, I guess, of the SIs and the complement of k. And this is over the set k itself. And the difference here is there's an absolute value here, and there isn't one here, and you're multiplying by the sine of x. But in any event, this is an inequality that should hold for every z in the null space of A. And that's why it's kind of difficult to analyze in general. And so what we've done is we replace this with a simpler condition, which one can analyze. And that's the following thing. So that quantity that we had to guarantee to be positive for all W's in the null space of A can be replaced by this quantity, which no longer has Z in it. And if this is positive. It's actually a lower bound on this. It's a lower bound with high probability on A. So almost any A you choose, this will be a lower bound on F. And the good thing about this is that, you know, there's no randomness in it. It depends on the weights W. It depends on these alphas, which are the fractions of these sets relative to the ambient dimension. It also depends on mu, which is the ratio between the measurements and the ambient dimension. And so once you have this, you know, it's easy. So you want this to be positive, and in order to make this positive, you probably want to maximize this over W, which is what we'll do in a moment. But, you know, for those of you who are interested, you know, you can look at the paper. But this is based on some results of Gordon, and actually invoking some Lipschitz, conditions for Gaussians. I won't go into the details of how that comes about. Okay, but once you believe that, then it turns out it's easy to optimize over W, and what happens is we get the result that I mentioned earlier. And what's interesting about the result is that it depends only on the probability P. It doesn't depend on the size of these sets, which was kind of surprising. A few other things that I can mention. Again, this is all approximate. So if you believe these approximations, then I can look at this quantity R, which is the dimensionality reduction. So in terms of recovering my signal, so I'm looking at the ambient dimension minus the number of measurements I need to recover it. For regular L1 minimization, in the context that we have, with the probabilities P and the alphas being the size of S over N, this is how much dimensionality reduction we get. For the weighted L1, when you choose these weights, this is what you get, and convexity of x squared, this is the sum of things squared, quantity squared, this is the sum of them squared. It's clear that you get more, if you will, dimensionality reduction from this. But again, you know, so this is just to give some insight. This is all, you know, based on optimizing a lower bound. You can look at, this ratio, so how much improvement you get in the dimensionality reduction. These are different cases. I won't go into the details, but depending on the scenario, you get between 5% to 35% improvement. Here's another plot I want to show. As I mentioned in an earlier paper, we actually, through this Grassmann angle stuff, can exactly compute the W. So let's look at a scenario here. So this is a scenario where we have, I guess, two sets. I think both sets are of equal size. In one set, you know, 0.4% of everything is non-zero. In the other set, it's 0.05. So we need to choose W1 to W2. And so the quantity here, omega, is W2 over W1. And so if any omega that you choose, well, it's a different weighted L1 optimization. And you might ask, what is the minimum number of measurements I need to recover the signal? And that's what the y-axis here is. So for example, if I choose L1 optimization, the two W's equal, then I need, I guess, 0.55. Again, I don't know what the exact numbers here are. Maybe 0.55 of the ambient dimension is probably what it is, measurements. Whereas if I use the optimal value, which you get from computing this curve, each curve requires a Grassmann angle computation, each point on the curve, you get something around 3 and some improvement. This is another example, and you see the same thing. The optimal thing here is perhaps around 4. If you use the formula that we derived here, which is that the ratio should be the following, in this example it's 0.95 over 0.6, which is around 1.5, it's over here. In the other example, it's over here. So this is 1.5. Maybe it's a bit off the optimal, which is between 2 and 3. But in terms of how much you lose on the measurements, it's very little. This is 0.5. This is maybe 0.48. I don't know. This is 63. That's 0.62. So it actually is quite comparable, close to the optimal you get from a much more complicated analysis, which you can't extend, as I said, beyond two sets, whereas this is readily extendable. Here again, some simulation results. So this is a signal where I've assumed, so it's a different model. I've assumed here that the signals, am I out of time, Mats? No. So what I've assumed here, so this is the sport of the signal. I'm assuming, you know, there's a probability for each entry being non-zero, and this probability varies from 1 to 0. If I do L1 optimization on a signal with this structure, this is the recovery that I get. So I need, I don't know, 260, 270 measurements to recover the signal. If I break it into two chunks and do a weighted with the optimal weighting that we described earlier for each of these chunks, then I get the red curve here. If I break it into four chunks, I get the next one, and so on. And so this shows that, you know, even though we're not being, you know, exact with this model here, even going from one to two chunks results in a big improvement. So we go from 270 to maybe around 240, 250 measurements to recover the signal. And the gains get less and less as you add more and more of these bins.
I'm probably short on time. I could have said something about rank minimization, but maybe I will skip that. But pretty much everything that I've mentioned can apply to nuclear norm minimization.
Again, this should have been nuclear. Math type is not here. Where you do nuclear norm minimization subject to some linear constraints, you can do a similar thing if you have an idea of where you think you're looking for a low rank matrix. If you have an idea of where maybe the subspaces that these things lie and what the probabilities are, you can weight appropriately and, you know, look at a weighted nuclear norm minimization problem.
I won't go through it. There's an analysis that's very similar, and you get almost a little more involved, but almost an identical result in terms of how to come up with the optimal weights. As I said, the details are more in the paper, and as I said, again, the message is very simple. For the weighted, where do I have the message? Here it is. For the weighted problem, this is a weight that would work, and as I said, it doesn't depend on how many sets we have or what the set sizes are. It seems to work well. So I'll stop here for questions. Yeah. I'd be happy. I don't think so, because if you estimate a little bit off, you know, where the boundaries are, it means you'll be a little bit off in terms of what the p's are. So if one set eats into the another one, it basically means you're off in terms of how you're estimating the p's. And it doesn't seem to be a whole, you know, I should have showed plots for that too, but you can already see here that, you know, it's not too sensitive to the weighting. And so if your p's are off a little bit, even though your relative weights might change, but both of them, as long as you're not too close to the L1, seem pretty flat. But I haven't done an analysis, but in terms of what we've seen, and there are more plots than these that we've looked at, but typically that's what we see. Well, so we have looked at this, you know, when we have been doing iterative L1. So suppose you have a signal whose sparsity is beyond, say, the traditional L1 threshold. So you can do an L1 optimization. You'll get something that's not sparse. But if you look at the larger coefficients that you get, and you can rigorize this, it turns out that where the larger coefficients are, there's a better chance that those were actually the non-zero ones. And where you had smaller coefficients, there's a better chance that those were actually small. So you can use that as your prior and feed it into a weighted thing like this. And you can repeat. So there are situations like this. Again, you know, when you have time variations, if you have something like a time series that is, you know, sparse in time, you can always use your prior estimate to give you a feel for what these bins are and where they are.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.